The way we view the world can either limit or expand our horizons. The crowd that surrounded Jesus in our gospel became angry at what they perceived as arrogance, if not blasphemy, on his part. How dare he call himself the bread of life? The way they saw him, wasn't this the kid that grew up down the street? Was he not the same one we used to run home when it was supper time? You know, the one who was so smart. Wasn't this that carpenter Joseph's son? How can he satisfy us? Do you remember that time he got lost in Jerusalem? How is he making such a claim? After all, he's one of us. According to a few verses earlier in the chapter we read from today, that certainly had not been their opinion. They had been ready to make Jesus king. They had seen a little boy's lunch turn into a spread for thousands and the leftovers spill over the 12 baskets. But Jesus knew while they were amazed at the miracle, they really weren't understanding the good news. So he told of himself as the bread of life, something that would last far longer than the bread we eat or the bread that had been fed to the multitude, something that satisfies the hunger of our souls. But they couldn't see that. This talk of having come down from heaven only confused them. They had seen him grow up like us all, though he had been born during that oppressive census the Romans took that made people scatter all over to the cities of their heritage. They thought he had a mother and father just like all of them. If they had seen more than the carpenter's son, they might have heard the depth of the good news. But when we limit our world to what we know or have experienced, we can miss the vastness of God's grace. Karl Barth wrote, "Were we to hear only of a God who measures up to our rule and is able to do what we can also do for ourselves without him, what need have we of such a God?" Whenever the church has told man of such a tiresome little God, it has grown empty. That radical daring, our yearning for the living God, will not be denied. How can we then find the bread that will satisfy us? Paul believed he was providing a clue to that question. In the letter to the church at Ephesus, there is a challenge at the first part of the fifth chapter that sets a high standard. "Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and live in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice for God." There is an ancient legend of a man with a scarred face who, in trying to hide his scars, had a mask made to cover his face. It appeared as a saint. Years later, his past is revealed, and an attempt to reveal what he really looked like was made by ripping the mask away. His face had taken on the form of the saint's face. We can become what we habitually imitate. The thoughts that fill our minds, the loves that fill our souls, these are creating who we are. For all of us who have struggled to stay on a diet, we know the importance of developing a taste for the right foods for us. What we don't eat on a diet can be far more important than what we do eat. Perhaps Paul is suggesting that God would like us to be on a spiritual diet where we will have to make some hard choices that fill our days and thus fill our hearts and minds. It is one thing to survive, to just get by, like the manna, the bread that got the children of Israel through the wilderness. It's another to feast on that which lasts forever. As we turn back to the letter of Ephesians, we find a list of many other challenges Paul offers for our consideration. So then, putting away falsehood, let us all speak the truth to our neighbors. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Truth is the bond that makes community possible. Mark Twain put it well, saying, "When in doubt, tell the truth." Then in verse 26 we read, "Be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger." There is a place for anger. We should get angry at injustice, but be civil in disagreements. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. declared, "To ignore evil is to become an accomplice to it." It is one thing to be angry with the issue, but can we take it a step further and be a brother or sister to the one we do not agree with? How easy is it to be quiet in the face of injustice and demean those we disagree with? Paul tells us to deal with what makes us angry now, not to let it fester within our bodies. He writes that we should not return to our old patterns. Thieves must give up stealing. It sounds strange, but he's saying there is a need for real change, for us to feast on what is lasting. Kierkegaard told a parable of a community of ducks waddling off to duck church to hear the duck preacher. The duck preacher spoke eloquently of how God had given the ducks wings with which to fly. With these wings, there was nowhere the ducks could not go. With those wings, they could soar. Shouts of amen were quacked throughout the duck congregation. At the conclusion of the service, the ducks left, commenting on the message, and waddled back home. None of them used their wings to fly. In verse 29, the challenge to realize the power of our words. Our words have the power to tear down or build up. The power of words to encourage, to show appreciation, to express care. These same words can be twisted to tear down, to hurt, and even to destroy. Then, as we come to the last two verses of the chapter, we are warned to put away bitterness and wrath and wrangling. As we fill ourselves with the bread of life, we develop a skill of forgetting and forgiving. You can't move on until you unload. In the book, The Hiding Place, Corrie ten Boom recounts the moment when the experience of such forgiving came to her. It happened in a church in Munich where she was the guest speaker. Out of nowhere, there stood before her a former Nazi SS agent who guarded the shower floor at the prison camp where she and her friends had been processed and exposed to many indignities and cruelties. The man reached out his hand to shake hers, as he expressed his appreciation for her message. But Corrie ten Boom kept her hand at her side. Angry feelings surged through her, but she realized how wrong they were. She prayed, tried to smile, struggling to raise her hand, but nothing happened. She breathed a silent prayer. Jesus, I cannot forgive him. Give me your forgiveness. She described what happened. As I took his hand, the most incredible thing happened. From my shoulder, along my arm, and through my hand, a current seemed to pass from me to him, while into my heart sprang a love for this stranger that overwhelmed me. And so I discovered that it's not our own forgiveness that the world's healing hinges, but of God's. When God tells us to love our enemies, he gives, along with the command, the love itself. This powerful story, I think, illustrates quite beautifully of what has been shared with us today in our gospel and epistle readings. Bread means life, forgiveness, and salvation. We will all be sharing the Eucharistic bread in just a few minutes, where we receive the presence of Christ and celebrate the gift of grace. As is written in 1 Corinthians 10:17, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. Amen.